On episode 287 of the Tennis Files podcast, you'll learn how to develop rock-solid technique with Coach Rick Macy.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Tennis Files podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey there, and welcome to another episode of the show. I'm currently out of town, actually in Orlando, near the USTA National Campus, and I was listening to some of the older podcasts in the archives, and this one caught my eye. It was an interview with Rick Macy on how to develop rock-solid technique that I did with him in 2019, and there are certain episodes that are really timeless and evergreen. You know, I think most of the content that I do produce on here is of that nature, in terms of being able to be used for a long period of time, unlike, you know, episodes that deal with like current results on tour and whatnot. But this one with Rick goes through the most important principles that can help you develop rock solid technique. And this is something that most of us struggle with, is just, you know, developing incorrect technique, whether it's through imbalances in our body or just taking the shortcut or not understanding how the kinetic chain works and so forth. So for this one, I talked to Rick about his philosophy on developing biomechanically sound technique. He gives us some great and very effective and yet simple technical tips, and explain some huge mistakes in our technique that if we fix, will really supercharge our efficiency and power. So, and he mentions a really good power leak as well for your serve that is really, really important, that if you recognize and fix, will really assist you with producing more power on your serve. So this was a great conversation that I had with him in 2019, and I wanted to bring it to you because I think it's that valuable. So without further ado, here is my interview with Coach Rick Macy.
Hey everyone, I'm Mehrban Iranshad, and we're here with Rick Macy to talk about how to develop rock solid technique, which is a part of tennis that we all struggle with. Rick is one of the most legendary tennis coaches of all time. He has coached 5 number one players, Venus and Serena Williams, Jennifer Capriati, Andy Roddick, and Maria Sharapova, as well as hundreds of world-class professionals. Rick's players have won over 247 USTA national championships since 1985, and Rick is also the founder of a fantastic academy, predictably called the Rick Macy Tennis Academy, and he's also a highly sought-out motivational speaker, clinician, and author. So, Rick, it's really an honor to have you on the summit. Appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, glad to be here and share some of my ideas, thoughts, and wisdom with everybody.
Thanks so much, Rick. Rick, you and the Academy are world-renowned for developing technique. I watched a few videos on YouTube and have seen your work, and a great forehand video as well with the USPTA and other. So appreciate you coming on. And the first question I have for you is, some players end up ignoring technique and they say that you can get by on superior strategy alone. But in your opinion, how important is good technique to reaching your true tennis potential?
Well, it depends on what your goals are. And it depends on, you know, what lens you're looking through the world of tennis at. I would rephrase it a different way. What if Federer had a severe Western grip and it hit every ball off his back foot? Do you think he would still be playing and be the player that that he became today?
Definitely not.
Okay, so I think it's that's probably the easiest answer for me to give right there. Okay, so you look at someone like Federer or anybody, these guys that, you know, biomechanically are really sound, it's a package. You know, it's not one-stop shopping. So the question you ask about superior tactics, strategy, and all that stuff, they go hand in hand, because let's just take Federer's forehand, for example. He has more options, more versatility, more deception, more disguise, more compaction. So he was ahead of the curve as the game has gotten faster, quicker, bigger, and all that good stuff. He was waiting there already hitting the ball like this when he won Junior Wimbledon, when he was 18 years old. So at the end of the day, and that's just one stroke, at the end of the day, the three big ticket items are the forehand, backhand, serve. Those are the most flawed strokes in the game. The other stuff, you know, drop shots, lie, slobs, those are pretty vanilla, and it's pretty globally around the world. It's kind of hard to mess that up. But then again, depending on what level we're talking about, if you're talking a 3-0 lady or a club player or, you know, a 4.5 or just junior college, as you reach the upper echelon and you want to be the best you can be, technique, and that's all in the eye of the beholder. You know, I've done a lot of work for all the USCA coaches in that area. A lot of other coaches, kids, high-level, world-renowned coaches, I coach their kids. So, you know, there's not a wrong way or a right way. I agree with you on that, but there's a better way. And the game has changed so much. You know, the more complicated you are, or the more you're the human improviser out there, it's going to be a tougher ticket. I tell everybody, what if this person had that stroke? And it always comes back to, they would have won millions of more dollars if they were better in that area. And it starts with technique, starts at a young age. You got to bake it in. The muscle memory is brutal to change as you get older, a little easier on the serve because you're standing still, but it's very hard to reprogram the reflexes and then re-brainwash the muscle memory as they get older. And that's why I got some kids, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, their technique on the forehand and backhand is better than some world-class players. And I'm not saying that's what they're going to be. I'm just saying they're going to enjoy tennis for a lifetime because they hit the ball amazing no matter what speed the ball is coming to them.
Yeah, great points there, Rick. Really appreciate that. And so when a player is struggling with their technique, whether they're young or if they've been ingrained with bad technique, generally for amateur players, what is the first step that you would have them take to correct this bad technique?
Well, when you say bad technique, there's a lot of tentacles, there's a lot of spokes, there's a lot of rippling that comes from that. So you can't just throw a net out there and say, what is bad technique? You know, if you do a billion of anything, you can master crummy, you know, but you've just mastered crummy. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a complicated question, because obviously the more repetitions you get in anything, you will get better, but you'll be limited. And that's kind of how I explain it to everybody. You know, way someone shoots a jump shot, you know, or hits a golf ball. You look at Jim Furyk, he has that waggle at the top, but he finds his slot. So there's no real medicine unless you want to rewire the whole thing. And I think if your technique, if you can run and you can get set and you're a dog and you want to compete, obviously those attributes are going to take you a long way. But if you have those qualities and you hit the forehand like Federer, I think your level is going to be, you know, totally different. So there's nothing you can really do other than just do the best you can and focus on, you know, when am I going to hit it higher or lower? Focus more on the strategic part of the game, because you're already dealt with the cards you've been dealt with, and it's pretty well baked in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense there. And one question too regarding, well, these are all about technique, I guess, Rick, but as far as sticking with a technical change, you know, let's say you're with a coach and say they have you change your serve to an abbreviated take back. I mean, how long does it, you know, should we stick with this technical change before we know for sure that it isn't for us and that, you know, maybe we should change to something else or revert back?
Okay, good question. First off, when you make changes, see, a lot of times people don't understand the serve. The serve's the most complex stroke in the game because there's a lot of moving parts, and no one understands the science behind the serve. They don't really understand that leg drive initiates racket beat. So that being said, you know, if you're 60 years old, I don't think the legs are going to be a big part of your serve because, you know, you're already limited. You're going, you know, you're more on the back 18 of your career. So, you know, so right off the bat, you're going to look at the serve totally different than, say, a world-class player. But that being said, there's no time limit. The best players do experiment. They mess around with grips and stance and take back. But the problem that I see, most coaches identify the symptom and they don't really understand the culprit. And obviously that's, you know, been one of my gifts and, you know, just studying this stuff and looking at 50,000 MRIs and being on the court, you know, probably more than anybody that's taught the game. Even today, I still teach 50 hours a week of private. So it's a little different when we just throw a net out there and say, try this, try that. But I do think having an open mind and trying anything could unlock relaxation. It could make you tighter. You know, it could be worse. A lot of times when I work with players, especially world-class players or high-level juniors, I got to reverse engineer the whole teaching concept, and I do it backwards because it's so baked in, and I do it backwards and I can solve the problem a lot quicker. So it's a little more complex the way I do this, but to put a time limit or a time clock on, it depends on each person. Some people are going to be a little looser. Some people are going to be a little more relaxed. Some people want to change. And then doing it out of a basket is different than a practice match. Then doing a practice match is different than a tournament. Then doing a tournament is different than another higher level tournament. So there's different progressions of handling the pressure just to see if the change is going to happen. But you don't change just to change, you know, and I think there's different levels of wisdom and insight unless they really have a biomechanical background or they have some understanding of the principles. It's going to be hard to get optimal technique because you can't just say, do it like Federer, or what, because this is so complex. And a lot of this I didn't understand, you know, until like 20 years ago. And I've been doing this, you know, 40 years.
Yeah, it's so neat now. I mean, Dr. Kovacs comes to mind, and a lot of other institutes where they're, you know, studying yourself as well, studying the biomechanics of each individual, you know, person, how they move and their efficiencies and things like that. So it's really important to know that instead of just, you know, suggesting a cookie cutter type of technique for everybody. But also regarding fixing a stroke, Rick, and you mentioned earlier about, you know, how you do it a different way than others sometimes. Like when you have a stroke that maybe has multiple issues, is it better to start fixing it from the beginning of the stroke and working towards the end? Or do you prefer working from the end of the stroke to backwards? Or do you have any sort of preference in that regard?
Great question. It depends on the individual and where I feel they're at and the progression of their development and how baked in or how problematic the problem is. But usually, and this is what's funny or ironic, you know, 10 years ago, people didn't think how you took the racket back had any bearing on the stroke. And through a lot of research that I've done and others, it has a lot to do because it, you know, puts the racket in orientates it in a certain place, the hand, the elbow, it influences, you know, the shape of the backswing or, you know, there's three components here, your wrist, elbow, and shoulder. They're all hinges and the hinge kind of goes the other way. So the modern forehand that you've seen that, you know, kind of went viral. I think people, it really opened their eyes the way I explain this and what really goes on. And I was still generic. I wasn't under the hood, but I went deeper than, you know, a regular tennis lesson. So to answer your question, it would be from the beginning more than likely, because how you start sometimes is how you're going to finish. And the beginning has a big influence. You know, I can change someone take back and solve maybe three problems because I transfer the energy in different directions. And it's really, I don't know, I don't want to say it's like the greatest show on earth, but people are blown away the way I can connect the dots and just expedite the learning curve. But I would say if there was one or the other, I would start from the beginning. But with some people, I might even put the racket in the other hand and they'll go, wow, I never felt like that before, because there's no muscle memory. Say they're a righty and I put it in their left hand. They actually do it technically better with the left hand than the right hand, but they can't do it because obviously the reps and they're not strong enough or maybe it's coordinated, but they check more boxes on the left side than the side that they've hit millions of balls and spent a lot of money. And I'm almost ready to send them into retirement after they see all this stuff.
Love it, Rick. Love it. Appreciate all that advice there. And so one aspect among others that amateur players struggle with is getting into a powerful loaded position. I think especially on the serve, but also on other strokes, of course. So what tips do you have for us on getting into an optimal loaded position so that we can unleash more stored energy into our shots?
Well, obviously, if you don't get there, you're not going to have as many options. And so, you know, getting to the ball, I mean, that's never changed in the history of tennis. You run, you get set and hit. Now it's like you run and it's more about loading. You know, that's the word the last 20 years. So I do a lot where I throw the ball to people and they run over there. They load the system. What I call the system is the body. They load the system and they just let the ball go by. Okay. And the reason why I do that, see, I'm working psychologically. I'm having a different objective psychologically in their head, because when people run to the ball, their first goal is to get it and their second goal is to hit it. Okay. And so what they do, especially like you said, the club player, or that's kind of, I think, what you're referring to, they run, they get near the ball and they just give it a thump because they have a racket and an arm and they picked up the racket with the hand and they think the arm hits the ball. Unfortunately, power starts from the ground up. The power starts from the leg. It goes to the hip, the shoulder, out the arm, through the racket. So you got to load the system. So what I do is I have people run to the ball, load. They'll be in that, you know, nice coiled position where the shoulders are farther than the hips, what we call a separation angle. And I let them make, I make them let the ball go by. And then I get them to feel what it's like to load. But, and for some people, it's even hard to let the ball go by. And that goes to show you mentally just how excited people are. Because we all know in this sport and sports in general, the wild card for greatness is calmness. You got to be very intense, very competitive, but you got to be calm. And so I do that drill a lot. And it's been a game changer for a lot of people because I've given them a reference point to run, load, but not hit the ball. And then when I bring the ball back in the equation, I've kind of baked in a little bit more the loading process instead of telling them, oh, you didn't bend enough or whatever. So that's something I use and I've had great success. And I got hundreds of corrective techniques that I have on all the strokes that I use to try to expedite the learning curve.
Wow. Love that drill, Rick. Appreciate that. I'm definitely going to try that right after this call.
A lot of people think, what are you doing? So kids have went home and they told their coach that and they're going, what is that? See, I'm doing it for psychological reasons. Mm-hmm. Most people don't load. Either it's a bad habit or they get near the ball and they're excited. So that's why they don't load, especially at the club level.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Rick. I mean, I do some footwork drills in the morning, and, you know, I've been trying to improve my load, especially on my backhand, because I find when I'm playing, kind of like you're talking about, I'm not loading enough on that. But, you know, when you don't have that variable of the ball, or if you have a great coach who will tell you to load with the ball coming at you, then that's when you'll improve yourself. So, Rick, you know, I feel like the serve is just the stroke that people struggle with the most from what I've seen. And can you kind of explain, like, why, I don't know if you have the same view, but why is the serve such a complex stroke that so many people struggle with?
It's interesting because just through all my experiences and, you know, being around a lot of biomechanists and, you know, people through my career and, you know, studied this stuff and looked at, you know, millions of video at 400 frames a second, the serve is the easiest thing to teach, even though it's the most complicated because there's no movement. You know, it's like hitting a golf ball, except obviously the ball's not stationary, but since there's no movement, there's a lot of things that are easier to pull off with the serve. But the reason why it's more complicated, 99%, I'd say, people don't understand the serve. And when I say that, I even mean world-class athletes, coaches, and all levels. They don't understand the science behind the serve. Now it's complicated because you got the left side of your body doing something and the right side, and there's a lot of moving parts going in a lot of different directions. positions and requires a little more coordination. So that's why it's problematic for the club player. The club player doesn't even have the right grip half the time. So if you're talking even at the world-class level, and I did a study of this, okay, over 95% of the women on the tour, biomechanically, the serve is incorrect. But if you do millions of anything, you're going to perfect something pretty decent. All right. So that being said, the science behind the serve is, and I mentioned this earlier, leg drive initiates racket speed. There's an optimal time when the racket should be going in and the leg should be going up. This is called counterintuitive. When one thing is going one way, the other is going the other way. So the science is the legs are supposed to drive the racket down into the lower part of the back area, if you want to call it that, or it just goes into that area. But most people enter that area anywhere from 10 to 100% too soon. They don't put the racket not only in the right place, okay, but they drive the legs at the wrong time. And the human eye can't see this. And I worked a lot with all the players at player development when the USTA was at Everett, and almost everybody was wrong. Even Riley Opapka, who I spent a lot of time with, who's now 7 feet tall. It's amazing because you can still do it wrong and still get a lot out of it. But, and it's kind of hard to explain in this interview exactly what I'm talking about. But the racket, you're preparing to hit the ball, the racket to the outside, you know, whether you're starting to drive your legs when the racket's like, say, Sampras or Kyrgios or Roddick or Tsonga, they drive it when the racket's a little more to the right. Okay. The legs start coming up and it pulls the racket in, or the racket's up like Tim or Federer a little bit. That's a good way to do it also. But when you do it like Sampras, Tsonga, Roddick, people like that, the forearm will rotate actually, from my research, about 90%, 90 degrees more, and you'll get more power spin. But I don't want to get too off track from your question, but the number one culprit is people drive the legs at the wrong time. And people, use your legs more. And they keep making the problem worse because the racket's already in too soon. And once I explain this at a seminar or convention over and over again, people understand it. But the human eye can't see it, even though I have a human eye, but the human eye can't see this. It happens too quick. And you can do it wrong and still get away with it. And there's a lot of guys on the tour that are flawless. And there's a handful of girls that are. And then on the second serve, it's brutal because most everybody leaks and puts the racket in way too soon. They don't want a double fault. So the timing of the legs and the racket are all wrong, but you can still pull it off. But that's really in a nutshell. And I covered a lot of real estate there. And that's why I've been fortunate, you know, to have a lot of people, no matter what level they got to, everybody, if they listen and they put in the homework, I can get them a great serve, no doubt.
Wow, Rick, that is fantastic stuff. I'm personally going to rewind this a few minutes and listen to that a few times. That was great stuff. Appreciate it. And as far as what you just mentioned, you know, the timing of the legs and the throwing, is there maybe one drill that you might suggest us to do as maybe a simple drill to kind of just help nail that in a little better?
Well, what I do is I put the people on probation. I put the racket up at a 90-degree angle. I put my racket next to their racket so they can't move it. I have them toss, bend, and tilt, and they start to jump first or drive the legs first, and then I let go of the racket so it shoots the body up into a dynamic cartwheel, and I can actually feel their racket pressing against my racket because everybody wants to leak the racket. So at the end of the day, that I do that more than anything, and everybody serves better with my racket on their racket. How crazy is that? I mean, I have so many people just freak out, and the parents freak out, and they video this stuff. And it's like everybody's freaking out about this, and they're going, because I make it happen for free, and free is good, and it shoots the body up into this, you know, vertical position. And like I said, they go into the dynamic cartwheel a lot more explosively, and they all say the same thing. I go, were you higher off the ground? Yes. Did you reach up more? Yes. Did the ball go over the net higher? Yes. Did I tell you to do any of those things? No. Wow. See, they all happen for free, and I don't even tell people to bend their knees, unless they don't bend their knees, obviously. And I actually reverse engineer it. Sometimes I have, and I can't put this in an article, so I don't want people to start throwing darts at me because they need to come and watch me teach, because that's why I couldn't write it. Jesse. You don't try to jump. Your legs drive and it comes, you come off the ground and we call it a jump. But sometimes if you think about it, how many people have you had that you've taught in your lifetime that jump too soon? None. Okay. Everybody drives their legs too late because no one understands the theory. I have people jump too soon and they still can't do it. I have them jump on purpose, like they're playing volleyball. Okay. Spiking a volleyball and they all serve better because what it does, it makes the racket more dormant. So they're not, their racket's not all over, you know, Palm Beach County down here, and the legs drive the racket and it's a pulling action. It's not just, you know, total spaghetti out of control arm thing. Don't get me wrong. The arm is loose and you're free and all that stuff, but the legs drive the racket. That's why you see a lot of the guys serve look different than the women serve. Not that the women's serves are bad. I'm not saying that, but they look different. They're shorter. They're more compact. They're more organized. And it's like a karate move. So it's a whole different concept because the guys have a tendency to do it a little different. Maybe they threw a ball as a youngster different, where the leg, hip, and shoulder were synchronized, whatever. But the problem is your arm is twice as long, got a racket in your hand. Everybody overcooks it extra crispy. The racket goes down the back too soon on the other side of the head. And it's just there's just some a minutia of problems that occur on the serve. And, you know, if they went at it from a biomechanical point of view and you really understood what should happen. But what most people do is they say, use your legs more, jump more, reach up more, you know, keep your head up. Those are all good tips, but all vanilla, and they're a symptom because no one really understands the real culprit.
Wow, Rick, that's amazing stuff. A real gold mine of information there. I know you're super busy. Rick, one last question for you on the technical side. Do you ban players from playing, you know, if they want to improve their technique? Do you not have them play tournaments in certain cases until they nail down the technique on a particular stroke?
Not really. You know, I think them playing a tournament, you get to see it live and in color, because when the fans are in the stand and, you know, there's accountability and pressure, that says it all. Everybody's good out of the basket or hand feeding or even in a practice match. And listen, at the end of the day, if they don't want to do it, that's their decision. I mean, they're going to make their own decisions. You know, as a coach, a teacher, a role model, all you can do is, you know, educate and give them the best, you know, advice that you can give them. They're going to go out there and pull the trigger and they're going to do what they want to do anyways, whether it's technically or you see this a lot strategically. You know, people are very aggressive. They're hitting early. Then you go to the tournament and they're in the prevent defense, you know, with no time on the clock. And they're just, you know, hitting off the back foot, lobbing the ball. And you're going, what is this all about? So, you know, at the end of the day, I just tell them, it's up to you. If you want to win, if you want a better chance to win, you're going to listen. If you like to lose, then do your own thing. I mean, just keep it simple here, black and white. You're going to make your own decision. And whatever you want to do, it's your game, your career, and whatever we can do to help you out, that's what we're going to do. But you're going to make that decision. And even how hard you work on this stuff, if you really want to get it, you're going to get on a ball machine and, you know, do, you know, 10,000 of these.
Gotcha, Rick. Great stuff. Can you talk to us about the Rick Macy Tennis Academy? Obviously, a fantastic academy. You know, where it is, what types of training programs are available there as well?
Yeah, what we do is very different. Okay, very different than any other academy. First off, the teaching methodology is really the best in the country, especially from a technical point of view. All the coaches have been trained by myself, so you get a constant theme. And that's different than any other academy because you go to court and, you know, one guy's like, you're getting Chinese and English. And, you know, it's like the whole thing is you're getting different points of view. So biomechanically, everybody sings the same song, even though I sing it maybe a lot differently because of my experience and understanding. Everybody's been trained in the methodology. So we have thousands of kids, especially 14 and under from around the world that come in all the time. And the one thing that's really different is, you know, I still teach 50 hours a week of private lessons. And, you know, I still have the passion, the energy. You know, I love to help kids. You know, I teach in a four-year-old, then the next hour I have someone that's going to Indian Wells, you know, playing the main draw. So it's a little different what we do. You know, my name's on the door, but I'm very engaged privately. And so I think that's a big thing because people come, a lot of them kids take private, not just for me, but from the other coaches. We never have more than 50 kids. There's 12 coaches, 2 fitness coaches. We don't do a lot of boarding. The boarding's privately. This is more about the instruction. Very personalized. The model is very different. I don't do any marketing. I guess I don't have to because what's different because I'm in, you know, it's just a different, it's not one-stop shopping like IMG. You know, we're not doing that, but the quality of the production, it's what it's all about. It's really what can your kid get and what are you going to do for my kid? And the reason why we don't have to advertise is word of mouth. And it has nothing to do with I taught the Williams sisters or Roddick or, you know, in the Hall of Fame or any of that. You know, those are all, you know, that's the icing on the cake. But like you, me, and anybody else, I try to go out there and I try to improve every day. And I got to be better tomorrow than I was today. And that's kind of how this is put together. And it's family orientated and it's personalized. And the people that come here, they improve. It's about helping others and teaching others. It's not just about, you know, getting a suntan and hitting on a clay court or a hard court or playing with other kids. You can get that anywhere. It's just the quality of the instruction. And then, you know, the kids play matches and there's fitness and drills. Everybody can do that, but it's teaching those kids. And this is what drives me. And we have so many kids really from age 5 all the way up to 14 that come here just for that, to get that foundation baked in and try to get optimal technique. And then there's a lot of kids 15 to 18 that obviously I can help them get the best college scholarship or help them navigate into pro tennis.
Love it, Rick. How can we connect and maybe join a training program at your academy?
How can you or who?
Well, I would say like any amateur players who are watching who maybe, you know, they're interested and they love what you're talking about. Like, what's the best way to connect with the academy to maybe?
They should send me an email to info@rickmacy.com. I mean, or if they want to call me, my number personally is on the website. I try to get back to everybody in 24 hours. And like I said, whether it's a 4-year-old or even I had an 85-year-old guy in here a couple weeks ago and he wanted me to do like reconstructive surgery on him. And I love a challenge. So we can help anybody. And that's what we're here to do, just you know, make people better and let them look at things through a different lens and they'll really improve.
Rick, you're the man. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. I really enjoyed this one. A lot of incredible information that people need to really pay attention to and put into action. Thanks so much for joining us, Rick, and wish you all the best and hope to see you sometime at a conference or something like that.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Rick. Take care.
All right. I really hope that you enjoyed my interview from the 2019 archives with the legendary coach Rick Macy. I always really appreciate and enjoy his contributions to the podcast and the summit, of which I've been very fortunate enough that there have been several of those. So yeah, really appreciate that from Rick. And if you do want to check out the podcast, any links that were mentioned or any other episodes, you can go to tennisfiles.com/applepodcasts with an S at the end, and then you'll be able to find a ton of podcasts, 287 of them at this point, for you to dive into. And you can always search in the search bar on that page, or actually if you go to tennisfiles.com/podcast, then you can search by word. And, you know, you can search for fitness, for example, if you want to learn more about fitness, or, you know, mental, that could be a search term, strategy, technique, mental game, whatever it is. So yeah, I highly encourage you to do that if there's a particular area that you're struggling with, because there's a lot of content on all that stuff. And, you know, by listening to the ones that are most pertinent, you can get the biggest and quickest turnaround in your game, the biggest ROI. So with that, I also would like to leave you with a quote, as I often do at the end of the show, pretty much every time. And this is by Theodore Roosevelt. And Mr. Roosevelt said, "Believe you can, and you're halfway there." Very, very true. And with that, thanks so much for listening. And I'll see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. This is your host, Mirabon, signing out.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.